If you have curly hair, you'll know all too well what it feels like to attract unsolicited comments and unwanted attention. People want to talk about it, and sometimes, weirdly, they try to touch your hair. And if you're one of the millions of people with curly or afro hair who have grown up in Australia, there's a fair chance you've been told in schools or in workplaces that your hair in its natural form is too wild or even unacceptable. For people of diverse backgrounds whose hair might be part of their identity, this kind of feedback can weigh heavily on their sense of self. Producer Karishma Luthria spoke with school students, graduates and change makers to find out about how they've come to embrace their natural hair in societies where beauty standards are historically Eurocentric.
When I first went to school from being home, everyone would always come up to me and be like, oh, can I feel your hair, blah, blah. And at the start, it was like, it was fun, like it was exciting, like you got attention and things. But I feel like later on, it started getting too much. Like you just wanted to be left alone or just, you didn't want to be touched all the time.
I meet Ni Laye Tete, a 27-year-old Ghanaian Australian man at his home. And over a cup of tea, we speak about his relationship with his hair and growing up in Australia.
Later on, I started realising I was different because of the hair, so I went to extremes like chemically straightening my hair to try and fit in, if that makes sense. But I felt like that didn't really work. It just made you feel more alienated because what made you significant or who you were, you just gotten rid of that, but you haven't changed anything. It doesn't suit you. It doesn't help the situation.
Rumbi Mutsiwa is the founder of a curly hair salon in Sydney. Rumbi tells me that when she first migrated here from Zimbabwe, she felt people judged others with curly and afro hair.
People being taunted for wearing their natural hair and seeing insults, you know, going left, right and centre. It's like, why are you looking dishevelled and all this sort of stuff? And, you know, if you are going to an event or even a job interview, you know, it's like you're trying to sabotage your job. So you realise that these things were already embedded, and I only discovered them as I had moved here because it was the first time I ever was a minority. And then experiencing some unsavory experiences that I'd had allowed me to then reflect. And in that reflection is where I then realized how much my culture had actually impacted me into assimilating and not actually embracing who I was.
Even for me, as an Indian woman with thick, curly, frizzy hair, I was told in one of my first few jobs here that my hair needs to look neat for me to look professional. For 2 years after that comment, I straightened my hair week after week until I had enough this year. Ni remembers having a similar realization.
One of the times I chemically straightened my hair, I like damaged my skin a bit, and then I started to think like, what am I doing? Like, what am I actually doing? And I was looking through old photos and things. And I was like, I'm actually an African. Like, I'm not some white, like, guy. Like, that's what makes me who I am. So it's kind of like part of a journey where I was starting to question why I do certain things, why I act the way I act, why I am the way I am. And then that was one of the things that came up. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not straightening my hair. I'm not doing anything. This is my hair. Like, it's my crown. That's the way I see it.
But the issue isn't only difficult for adults of diverse and African backgrounds. Children, particularly in Australia's private schools, face a tough time if they leave their hair in its natural state, as an afro or even in braids. I meet Tashan's mum, Donna, at her home in Sydney's West. And Donna says her daughter was singled out for having braided hair with beads in it, a West African tradition. From Donna's perspective, Tashan's hair was not only neat, but also an expression of her connection to her own culture.
It was really upsetting. She's my youngest, gone through the school. And yeah, it was like, you know, I drop her off. I live around here. I see all the Australian kids, Asian kids, whatever, and it's like, well, their hair's the same length and they've got it out. Yours is in braids, it's neat, it's tidy, it's put up. I didn't see the issue with it. Yes, she had beads, but yes, that is a cultural thing. It's, you know, no different to, you know, some cultures having necklaces and they wear them. So, yeah, that made her feel very uncomfortable, and it made me feel uncomfortable knowing that was being done.
Tashan's experience at private school isn't an isolated one. In Brisbane, a 5-year-old Cook Islands boy was threatened to be expelled for growing his hair long for cultural reasons. One person even told me they had been threatened to have the police called on them for wearing their natural curly hair whilst in school. And in New South Wales, a young musician named James Emmanuel started a petition that gained almost 25,000 signatures calling on the New South Wales Education Minister Sarah Mitchell to make it illegal for schools' uniform policies to discriminate against students' natural afro hair. She responded that while all public schools in New South Wales have trained anti-racism officers, she has no control over uniform policies at non-government schools, and that she encourages all students at these schools to speak to their school management if they're advocating for change. James Emmanuel likens his experience at private school to an erasure of African culture and identity, especially when teachers called his natural afro hair or braids and cornrows extreme and messy. Some even call it hair hate. In Tashan's school in Sydney's West, teachers would also target young boys frequently. So Tashan and her friends, Esther and Ashok, took matters into their own hands.
Hello.
I'm Tashan, come in.
I'm
Thanks
Esther.
And I'm Ashok, hi.
We noticed in our school there was just a few like instances where we were being treated a bit unfairly with our hair.
The rules just fit white people and how their hair like tolerates.
So we decided that we would take the initiative to present to our principal and our teachers like just the history of our hair and like, you know, the cultural significance. And so after that, the teachers received it well and they actually listened to what we had to say and things were fixed. And then our society and culture teacher, she had this idea for us to start a group.
The group is called The Tribe and we meet every week. And it's just a group to like empower the black people at our school.
But Nee says the fact that hair is a central part of someone's culture shouldn't have even been up for debate in the first place.
If you educated yourself at the start, you wouldn't have that issue. You'd say, yeah, it looks like that, but it's different, it's clean, it's this, this and this. You've just chosen not to understand it and block it out. And it's not your choice to if whether or not you understand someone's hair. We always get put in these positions where we're fighting for things that we think are wins, but they're not wins. You can't ask someone that's oppressing you for freedom. It doesn't work that way. And then they tell you, oh, no, you're asking too hard. Slow down, ask a bit softer, and we might give it to you. It's just up to them when they decide they want to give it to you. That's why I'm saying it's up to us to say no. We're not playing games with our identity. This is who we are. This affects us a lot.
And as a trio of change makers at their school, Tashan, Ashok and Esther say Australians of African backgrounds often feel like they're objectified and their privacy is invaded because people always want to touch their hair.
Constantly people always ask, or some people won't even ask, they'll just touch it.
How does that make you feel?
In the nicest way possible, like an animal. Like,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, because like, it's just kind of like, you know, I know it's not something they see every day, but like, it's just at least have the decency to ask, not just come and touch my hair. Like, I'm still a human at the end of the day.
Yeah, me too. Like, people just grab me from behind. I'm just like, is someone trying to fight me or something? Like, I wouldn't know what to do. I was like, turn around and be like, oh, your hair's so nice. Who did it for you? I'm just like, oh, my mom. She goes, can you do my one? I'm just like, well, I don't know.
Tashan is now an aspiring hairdresser and wants to start her own curly and afro salon someday. But her relationship with her curly hair wasn't always as loving as it is now.
Well, I mean, firstly, being mixed already comes with that. But yeah, just being surrounded by people who didn't have curly hair just made me want to change my appearance, to conform to society, conform to what I thought was right. I even remember as far back as like daycare, honestly, like having these thoughts, and I would have been like 5'4" back then. I just really wished I had straight hair so I wouldn't have to go through all these things, because no one around me was experiencing that. And like, just to feel like my hair wasn't really accepted, it was just like an anomaly.
Hair salon owner Rumbi Mutsiwa estimates that 65% of people in the world are curly haired. But Zara Gabra, a senior curl stylist at Rumbi's salon, says prevailing beauty standards hold a lot of power over young African Australians and people of colour.
Eurocentric standards surround us, even to this day. Although there's a big push for diversity, we still see a majority of, I guess, like billboards and like TV shows and movies that lack representation. So I think, again, subconsciously, that played a big part in terms of identity, because, well, for so long in Australia, there was only this kind of one image that was pushed for so, so long, that anything outside of that was seen as abnormal.
Millions of First Nations people, Torres Strait Islanders, African, Caribbean, South Asian and multicultural Australians with curly hair lack access to products and hairstyling services that suit their hair types. And advocates say very few hairstylists know how to work with curly and afro hair. But this is where Rumbi comes in. Rumbi regularly holds curly and afro hair masterclasses for hairdressers and makes her own products.
Some products that I'd come across weren't actually great for curly hair, but marketed well. And as a curly girl, I think what I struggled with the most was the fact that people can capitalize off of someone's insecurity, because it's that the psychology behind the curls. Like, I might have curly hair, but I'm facing issues of identity, questioning my identity, questioning, you know, am I enough? Am I beautiful? Am I attractive? And there's so much that is going on that it can be very debilitating. I just had to do something. And so, being the problem solver I am, we created products.
You scrunch. Yeah. So first you massage the product in and then you scrunch.
Yeah. This squishy sound entered my life this year. After I put in a leave-in conditioner and a gel, the squishing helped style and define my curls. And it's completely changed my perception towards my curly and frizzy Indian hair.
So good, I love it.
My entire life I've thought straight hair was beautiful, but after lots of unlearning and support from Rumbi's salon, my hair is now a part of who I am. After all, as someone once told me, frizz is just a curl waiting to happen. For others, like hairstylist Zara Gabra, embracing her hair has meant embracing her true, authentic self.
From there, I fell in love with my hair and kind of like decolonized the way that I was thinking and understood that my hair is so much bigger than just hair, that it was tied to my heritage and my identity, and to embrace that was like a really big thing.
Within the education system, though, hair continues to be a flashpoint for discrimination. Donna, Tashan's mom, says that while Tashan's school was really receptive to the presentation Tashan and her friends did, this acceptance is not a common occurrence in Australian private schools.
So the school didn't have that understanding that there's different cultures in all these African countries, because even in one, like in Nigeria, there's so many tribes. You know, in other African countries, there's so many tribes. They speak differently, they do things differently, and I think there's so many African people here now that Australia needs to sort of move that little bit forward and have more of an understanding.
That was Donna, the mother of student Tashan, ending that story by Karishma Luthria.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.